Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 7, Chapter 7, verse number 55, Radha Gopinath Temple. This is July 31st, 2008. Etabane vilokesmin pungstam svarta parak smrta ekanta bhaktira govinde yat sarvatra tarikshanam. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this material world, to render service to the lotus feet of Govinda, the cause of all causes, and to see him everywhere, is the only goal of life. This much alone is the ultimate goal of human life, as explained by all the revealed scriptures. Purport. In this verse, the word sarvatra tarikshanam describe the highest perfection of devotional service, in which one sees everything with reverence to Govinda's activities. The highly elevated devotee never sees anything unrelated to Govinda. Starva-jangama degi nadegi toramurti sarvatane johoi ishta devspurti. The Mahabhagavata, the advanced devotee, certainly sees everything mobile and immobile, but he doesn't exactly see their forms. Rather, everywhere he immediately sees manifest form of the Supreme Lord. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 8, verse 274. Even in this material world, a devotee does not materially manifested things. Instead, he sees Govinda in everything. When he sees a tree or a human being, a devotee sees them in relation to Govinda. Govinda Madhipurusham. Govinda is the original source of everything. Ishwarak Paramakrishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govindak Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna is known as Govinda, the Supreme Controller. Has an eternal blissful spiritual body. He's the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he's the prime cause of all causes. Brahma Samhita 5.1. The test of a perfect devotee is that he sees Govinda everywhere in this universe, even in every atomic particle. Andantarasta paramanu trayantarastam. Perfect vision of a devotee. It's therefore said, Narayanam mayang dira pashanti paramartina jagadhanamayam lubdha kamukha kamini mayam. Wow. An interesting verse. A devotee sees everyone and everything in relationship with Narayana, Narayana ayam. Everything is an expansion of Narayana's energy. Just as those who are greedy see everything as a source of money-making. Those who are lusty see everything as being conducive to sex. The most pureful devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, saw Narayan even within a stone column. This reminds me here, in the middle of the purport, famous verse in Bhagavatam 10th Canto, chapter 13, verse 2. Satam ayam sarugagapatanga nisarago yet arthavani sutacheta samapi pratikshanam navyavat atutasayat striyavitanam eva sadhu varata. The verse goes that devotees of the Supreme Lord are attached to him who is the core of their life. He is the life of the devotees. Devotees don't see anything but him. They're trained to see Krishna everywhere, just like a lumpat is attached to women and sex. They're attached to topics about him, just like a lumpat, a debauchee, is attached to topics of women and sex. That's the shloka. So I don't... Just as those that are greedy see everything as a source of money-making, and those who are lusty see everything as conducive to sex. The most perfect devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, saw Narayan even within a stone column. This does not mean, however, that we must accept the word Daridra Narayan, which had been manufactured by some unscrupulous person. When it actually envisions Narayan everywhere, it makes no distinction between the poor and the rich. To single out the Daridra Narayanas, or poor Narayan, and reject the Dani Narayana, or rich Narayana, is not the vision of a devotee. Rather, that is the imperfect vision of materialistic persons. End of the Bhaktivedanta Purport, 7th Canto, 7th Chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled What Prahlad Learned in the Womb. It's an interesting shloka Prabhupada quotes here in the purport. Vrindavan, Aram, and Rit. I had fun last night. We were with Madhu Mangal in his house, and we read from Dvija Brahmani Katha how the boys were hungry. But we got to understand that when they say that they're hungry, it's not that they're hungry. They're worried that maybe Krishna might be hungry. And because Krishna, the boys don't, they eat together. So in the plea of giving them food, they wanted Krishna to also sit with them and eat. You know, that's the idea. So they're not selfish. We shouldn't think that. Although they put it that way. Their mood is not selfish. Nobody in the spiritual world is selfish. You can't stay there and be selfish. So it means they're not selfish. It's feigning. It's feigning selfishness. Feigning. The real motivation is they wanted to get some food because they went out into the forest all the way to Madhuvan for a long way away. They didn't have breakfast. They were hungry, of course, but they were thinking that Krishna is also hungry. He probably also didn't go without breakfast. He probably didn't have anything. So they wanted to eat with Krishna. And Krishna is proportionally hungry depending on the greed to feed him. If you're greedy to give him something, then he's greedy to accept it. That's the nature of Krishna. So, then he told the boys, okay, to fulfill your desires, go ask from the charity of the Brahmins. And they tried their best. Following Vedic etiquette, the Brahmins spurned them. Krishna laughed at that, you know, evidently expecting it. You know? Being that he is all-knower, sarva-dharma-gya, he knows everything. So he laughed at it. Evidently he expected it. And then told him to go and approach the Dvija Brahmanis who were attached to him. And they were always eager, looking for the opportunity, because they were always thinking of Krishna. Priyashrita priyatamodaya karma napurne. That for a long time, the Tagbhas of their beloved were the ornaments of the cities of their ears. Yasmin nimagnamanasas, their minds were fixed into him. It was mentioned twice in there about nimagna, just like rivers flow. Nimagna iva samudra, just like the rivers flow unimpeded to the sea. So, nimigna manasas, the minds of those Dvija Brahmanis were flowing toward Govinda. And Govinda knows everything. He's situated within everyone's heart. Govinda knows everything, so he wanted to reciprocate with them and give them an opportunity. So they came with their four types of stuff, food stuff. And then, but there's no free lunch. There's no free lunch. They had an agenda. They wanted to surrender to Krishna, and they wanted Krishna to satisfy them according to their desire. They wanted to surrender to Krishna from their perspective. Now, Krishna had to be conscious that, wait a minute, things are just not socially right to do it in that way. He wanted them to surrender what would be socially acceptable at the time, and he wanted them, that would be good for the public, good for them, and obviously that's what his desire was, so it means they should surrender according to Govinda's desire. So when Govinda told them to go home, they objected to that. Wait a minute, this is not fair. Maivam ribo arhati nirsang gaditunga nirsang shum satyam korusva tavapada mule. He said that, they said, this is not fair, O Almighty One. You should not reject us in these unfair ways, because you state that you're going to give shelter to those who take shelter of your lotus feet. You should make that statement true. So, the Brahmanis were sticking to Shastra and wanted shelter in that way. But Krishna wouldn't hear of it. He wanted, obviously, those Dvija Brahmanis were not ready to give up their mood. I was starting to wonder if the Tikacharyas mentioned anything about that. That, like Lakshmi Devi was not ready to give up her standard as the goddess of fortune. And therefore, she could not see Rasadevs. So I'm wondering if the Dvija Brahmanis were still attached to their position, their social position, their Deyabhiman, the Abhimana of being Devis. Because they said that we want to stay here in the forest and we'll be Vandevis. We'll serve as Vandevis. So that gave a little hint that they wanted to remain Devis. They were already referred to as Nridevi, you know, amongst this world. They were considered to be Nridevis, goddesses walking on the earthly planet, Nridevis, like that. Their husbands were Nridevas, representatives of the personality of Godhead, godly personalities walking on the earthly surface. And their wives were considered to be Nridevis, like that. So when they said that they wanted to become Vandevis, we'll stay here in the forest. We've given up our husbands and family, and despite their prohibitions, and we want to become Vandevis, and we'll stay here, and we'll live on Tulsi garlands, which have been kicked away by your beloveds as they embraced you. They understood the special quality of Krishna's gopikas. They weren't trying to come to that platform, but they wanted to have another platform. Whereas, evidently, Krishna did not want to disrupt the social order. That's one thing. Another thing to think about is maybe their bhajan was not yet pakka. Right. And therefore, Krishna wanted them to ripen their bhajan by going home and serving Krishna in separation and continuing their position within Varnashram system as Nridevis. He wanted them to continue as Nridevis and focus their mind on him. And then I corresponded that with 10th canto, chapter 29, where the gopis say the exact same thing. It's so interesting. There are two shlokas there that Krishna speaks that are exactly the same to the Dvija Brahmanis and to the gopis. Krishna's Gambira. He's Chatur, he's smart, but he's also Gambira. So when he instructs the gopis or instructs the Dvija Brahmanis, his words are not false because they are true for some specific class of men. But for the gopis, when Krishna gave them the instruction, that instruction was an old instruction. They were already masters of that instruction. When Krishna suggested it to them, Shravanam, it's very good for all of us. Shravanam, Darshanam, Dhyana, Damai, Bhavo, and Ukirtana. This is 10 Canto 29 chapter, verse 27. Or 10 Canto 23rd chapter, verse 33. Bilkul same. Exact. 100%. When the Bhagavatam Shloka is the exact same twice, there's really good emphasis. And there's no purport. There was a purport in the second one. In 29:27, it says Krishna is certainly presenting formidable arguments. But it was a formidable argument. They were trying to tell the gopis they should turn around and go back home. The gopis saw through it, the argument, immediately, because they were already masters in everything that they said. Shravanam, darshanam, dhyanat, mayi bhavo, anu kirtanat. Natatasani Karshena. These things that Krishna says in that shloka, the gopis were already masters of that. That was their only activity all day long. Shravanam, hearing the speeches of each other, glorifying Govinda. Darshanam, seeing Govinda everywhere. Huh? Through that sound vibration of his pastimes, they're seeing him everywhere in all respects. And dhyana, and meditating on that. And mayi bhava and ukirtana, following his moods and talking about that. They were the masters of that. And natatasani karshane, they understood by social restrictions they could not be with Krishna in the daytime. It was just unethical. So it was secret association. They had to remain separate from Krishna. They were forced to serve Vipralamba Seva. So when Krishna presented the philosophy to them, it's a formidable argument, but they saw right through it. It's a stalling tactic. And therefore they chastised him. They said, "O stubborn one, please reciprocate our love. Why are you so stubborn? Why are you playing games with us? Don't play games with us. Just reciprocate our love." They got all over his case. It's lovable. It just shows their relationship. The gopis were all over him, all over his case, you know? Krishna didn't. But the thing about it is that we have to understand that Bhagavan is Akila Rasamrita Murti. He's the form of relationship for every living entity. And when he speaks in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not only to the gopis. He has to instruct a wide audience. So his slogan, anywhere he does it, even while joking with the gopis or whatever, it's all for them and for everybody else. For some specific living entities, it's very poignant. It just slaps them in the face. It's like, wow, you know? And like it's meant to. But for the gopis, there are already masses in that. It's a stall tactic. Don't stall. Don't be so stubborn. Reciprocate our love. Don't be so stubborn. They got all over his case. It's hilarious. I can't keep it out of my mind because it's a very wonderful chapter of Bhagavatam, very wonderful section of Bhagavatam. This is also wonderful. So, Prahlad Maharaj, Gambira, very grave, is giving a conclusion. Shlokas like this one today are very powerful because they give a conclusion. It's like we're trying to eat chewed remnants of the previous acharyas. So without wasting our time, they give us the conclusion so that we can focus. We do not waste our time. Etavan, this much, eva, certainly. This much, eva, etavan, eva. It's interesting. The same lines, etavan, eva, loke, smin, is very, very common. In fact, is the last line, like you might have heard me chant it while you were chanting it, because Pungsam Svarta Parak Puman is another verse elsewhere. It says Pungsak Svarta Parak Puman. So that's why I chanted it sometimes. It's like a habit. Old habits die hard. So, as they say, right? So there is another shloka elsewhere that said Pungsak Svarta Parak Puman. So it's, but here he has Pungsak Svarta Parak Shmrita. Shmrita, according to the Shastras. Parak, transcendental. Shmrita, mentioned in the Shastras. So it depends on the situation. Bhagavatam does that. There's another shloka where Kapila Dev, in the third canto, chapter 30. I think it's verse number 35. That corresponds to Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 14. I think it's verse number 28. There. And the only difference is one word. Only difference in the two shlokas is one word. That makes it cool for cross-referencing. When you study Bhagavatam like that, it's cool, it's interesting, it's mind-captivating. When there's only like one word difference, it's like, it underlines the significance of the instruction. There's only one word difference. And the difference is just variety. Instead of chanya, I think in one shloka, it's used klesha in another one. It's just like further elaboration. Vyasadeva does it. It's driving home the instruction by saying it again. And he does it elsewhere also. If you look in 12th canto, chapter 12, the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's at the end of the Bhagavatam. So the glories of the Bhagavatam are being manifested. And there's many of the same shlokas in the first canto, chapter 2, are driven again. Slightly different. The first pada, the first half of the verse is the same. And then this is a slight twist for variety. It focuses the mind in the original one in the first canto, chapter 2, but it gives you a slight variety. You know, it's attractive. It makes Bhagavatam attractive. So when they use these words, etavani valoke smin, it means, now I'm giving you the conclusion. You don't have to research it yourself. I'm giving you the conclusion. This is like Prahlad Maharaj's sneha, his affection to his classmates, that this is the conclusion I came to, and I'm offering it to you. It's his sneha, it's his affection. It's his affection. So this shloka is Prahlad Maharaj's affection. And it's interesting, it happens to be the last shloka of the chapter. So it's like the shikshas are building up to a crescendo. And then it falls, boom, you know, on the conclusive point. You know, it rises up to a crescendo and goes, foof, here. Don't have any doubt. So, etavane valokesman pungsa svartha parakasmrita. Ekanta bhaktira govinde, to have one pointed devotion to govinde. Now, it's interesting that we use these words govinde here. That's a very interesting word. Because of all types of relationships of Krishna, this word is so complete. Krishna is known by his different names. Has different names. So the idea of Govinda is the one who gives pleasure to the land, the cows, and the senses. That's Govinda. That word shows that Krishna is expert, daksha. He's not just simply chatur. He's not simply, you know, tricky fellow. But he's extremely expert on how to satisfy each and every living entity. Raghunath Das Goswami, in his Dasikam, he glorifies Govardhan as, he said, there, Vrajanaro Pasu Pakshi Vrata Soke Gadatta. You have taken a vow to satisfy the human beings, the animals, and the birds of Vrindavan. You've taken a vow to satisfy them. Then Raghunath Das uses that conclusion to pray to the Lord. Aganita kuda tvat natvam mamuri kritya tantum. Therefore, be merciful to unhappy me. And please give me, you know, nija nikatani vasam dehi govardhanatvam. And his govardhana vasa parthana dasakam, he says, You've taken a vow as the form of Govardhan to see to the happiness of all of Vrindavan's animals, humans, birds, and beasts. Therefore, please be merciful to unhappy me and give association residence near you. In terms of poetry, it's charming. In terms of prayer, it's charming. Why am I mentioning it? Because I mentioned the same thing that the Dvija Brahmanis, they quoted Shastra, and they say that you promise in Shastra that you will always give shelter to your lotus feet of those that are surrendered. We want to surrender. So you should not cheat us. You should, whatever is promised, as you promise in the Shastras, you should fulfill that. But what's interesting is, it's obvious that they wanted to surrender their way, and they wanted Krishna to package himself to them. It's not exactly 100% surrendered. It's not unexpected, because Krishna does it. Yada yada di ata urugaya vibhavayanti tat tat vipu pranayase saranugrahaya. Sometimes Krishna's saranugraha, his compassion, Bhagavatam states, is that he manifests himself in precisely the way the devotee wants. So it's not, in one sense, it's not upstart, it's not impudent of the Dvija Brahmanis to want that. Because Krishna states, also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 4, verse number 19, whatever way my devotees worship me, I reciprocate with their love in that way, and that is my natural propensity. So Krishna is a gentleman, and he's cognizant. And because he's the source of all living entities, he is able to reciprocate with each and every jiva according to their aspiration. As long as it is favorable for his service, he's ready to manifest himself in a particular way to satisfy them. In this case, the Dvija Brahmanis wanted to make the decision for Krishna, and it was just not socially right. So Krishna wanted to give himself to the Dvija Brahmanis in a particular way that would be socially acceptable for the public as well. And also put the devotees, the Dvija Brahmanis, for example, in a situation where their love for Krishna would grow more in separation. Krishna reciprocates, and sometimes he doesn't reciprocate, Vishwanath Chakravartipad says. And he does so specifically when the gopis chastised him, saying that you should reciprocate our love. Then they, later on, three chapters later, they continue to go to him on the same point, that you're not reciprocating our love according to what we want, and you're stalling. You know, you're stalling. You're biting for time and you're stalling. And you're being stubborn. And that's not fair. You should not be stubborn. You should reciprocate our love. So then, when Krishna was too chatur, you know, he was getting around them, you know, by arguments and like that. Then they wanted to tie him in the corner, you know. So then they said, tell us the nature of friendship. So Krishna diplomatically and philosophically mentioned about the nature of friendship. That sometimes friends, our friends, they reciprocate. But when they receive love, then they reciprocate love. Others, like parents, they reciprocate whether you love them or not. And others are Admarama. There's sages that are Admarama. They don't reciprocate. You love them, you don't love them, they're indifferent. Because they're self-satisfied. They don't require anything from anyone. You love them, you don't love them, they remain the same. These are the three kinds of friends, Krishna said. Then he got to the point. It's for us. But the main reason I don't reciprocate the desires of my dear gopis, of those who love me, reciprocate the desires of those who love me, is that I wish to increase their love. They become like a person who had some money and they lost it and can do nothing but think about their lost wealth again and again. Wow. The verse is like, wow. You know, it's in the poetry, it's cool. In statement, it's intense. It's poignant. Krishna didn't beat around the bush when he said that point. And Vishwanath Chakravartipad's commentary on that shloka is also very poignant. He mentions there that it's a haunting statement that Vishwanath Chakravartipad, as you know, in his Bhagavatam commentary, he sometimes gives extra conversation. He gives the background. He's very clear. He said that the devotee laments that sometimes Sri Krishna used to speak to me in the heart, but he hasn't spoken to me lately. He hasn't come into my heart to say anything lately. So why not? So what have I done? Have I done anything to make Krishna be so standoffish? You know? So what have I done that Krishna's become so standoffish? So then the devotee looks within himself or herself and tries to improve themselves, chastising themselves like that for their lack of improvement. They try to improve themselves. And Sri Krishna just stands back and smiles, watches the whole affair. And when the pain of viraha, because Krishna's silence, it just gets too much, it just eats away at the devotees. The devotee starts to wonder, do I have a relationship with him? You know, is it really substantial or what is it? You know, so they start to question it. When Krishna's silent for a long time, the devotee starts to wonder about the relationship. than Krishna to pacify them because he's Bhakta Vatsal. He cannot. He's not happy with the pain of his devotees. He's not happy at all. That's not his intention. So when the devotee gets so sorrowful because Krishna doesn't reciprocate, then Krishna will reciprocate. A drop. He comes, just a drop, Vishwanath says. Just a little bit, enough to pacify the devotee. And they think, oh, Krishna's again come. And then he leaves. Chatur. He leaves again, you know, to plunge the devotee again into viraha. The cycle is repeated. Govinda, he's the lord of the land, the cows, and the senses. He's so charming. Can't keep your eyes off him. Can't keep your mind off him. So charming. And yet, he's so tricky. He's so tricky. And the trickiness is gnawing at you. This is what Kanu means. I was asking one Vaishnava in Mathura. I was sent for some other reason. I did that. Afterwards, I said, now let me ask a question. Tell us then, why is Krishna called Kanu? And he goes, phew. His material world is so dry. He said, everybody comes to me for some other mundane purpose. It's like Yamaraj, you know. You know, they come for some particular reason. And I have to do an official thing. And I don't get an opportunity to speak Harikatha. Now I'm so happy that I get a chance to speak Harikatha, the sadhu said to me. I'm so happy. They approach him for something else, you know. Khan is one who was over, is happy. Khan is happy. He's always happy. Nischintya. He doesn't have to think about anything in Vrindavan. Everything is under his control. Nischintya. Khan. He's always happy. Kanhaya. Oh, that means he's overflowing with happiness. The happiness is overflowing from him and spills out to so many devotees. That is Kanhaya. Overflowing happiness. And ooh is a suffix that for his happiness, he gives us pain. He makes us the butt of jokes. It's very sharp. His words bite into us sometimes. Very sharp words he uses. And he just like laughs and just throws it over his shoulder like it's nothing at all. But it's actually really a biting statement. You know, and it bites into us. And we're the source of Krishna's humor. He makes us the butt of jokes. It's painful. But Govinda is Govinda. Who can take your eyes off of Govinda? Who can take your mind off of Govinda? So, he's painful, but you can't keep your mind off him. That's what Kanu means. You can't leave him. He's too sweet, he's too irresistible. He's too chatur also. But that's all right. We're ready to tolerate the chaturness if we get his association somehow. That's all right. Let us be the butt of his jokes. Let it be the source of his humor. As long as Krishna is satisfied. If that satisfies Krishna, let it be so. But that doesn't mean the pain goes away. You follow me? Krishna makes you the butt of jokes. You think, all right, if Krishna is satisfied, that's okay. But that doesn't mean the pain went away. So Krishna noticed that different gopis and different devotees, they would look at him with contrary eyes. Because Krishna said something that disturbed their mind. But he's Kanu. They can't leave him. So Krishna understands that because he's very Gambira. He understands that he's within the heart of everyone and he understands what he did that blew their mind. You know? So he's very diplomatic. Then he again goes back to that devotee, pacifies them. Some devotees are very intense, like Sridham. They blast Krishna. Look at these boys, he said at one point. When Krishna disappeared to go see the gopis or see someone else, and evidently part of his strategy, whatever, some reason or other. He didn't take permission. He just disappeared, and he didn't take permission to disappear. And his devotees that were expecting him not to disappear were shocked, you know, that he disappeared all of a sudden. And then they wonder, where are we going to do without Krishna? Where are we going to, how can we live without Krishna? Where is Krishna? But how can we live without him? So then they fell on the ground in anxiety, breathing heavily, like their life air was ready to depart. Then they called out, Ha Krishna, Ha Priya, Priya Bhakti Rasarnava describes. Ha Krishna, Ha Priya, where is he gone? Hearing the pain of lamentation from his devotees, then Krishna became concerned. His aim is to increase the love of his devotees, not to give them pain. But that's the way it is. That's the way Vipralamba is, that you're going to get some pain. The pain has to be bearable pain. It cannot be unbearable pain. If it's unbearable pain, then you die. That's not Krishna's intention. He wants to fortify the devotees so that they can bear the pain of separation. You see? So when the boys fell down on the ground, breathing heavily, feeling like their life was about to depart in separation from Krishna, then Krishna immediately became concerned for their welfare, and he played his Murali flute. When the sound of Krishna's flute came, then they got their energy back. Then they said, Kaha Krishna, Kota Krishna, where is Krishna? Where is he gone? We hear him, but we don't see him. So Kaha Krishna, where is he? Kota Krishna, where did he go? They ask. Then Krishna appeared before them. And when he did so, then Sridhama got all over him. He became angry. As a representative of all the boys, he said, Kanu, if you disappear for a moment, Rupa Goswami gives the example about yoga and viyoga, meeting and separation. He said, if we are unable to see you for a moment, just see what devastation enters into these boys. Can you see the anxiety on their face? He says, now you go and you embrace each and every boy to your chest to remove his pain. And I was like shocked when I read that for the first time, that actually, by the order of Sridhama, Krishna expanded himself to unlimited forms to hug each and every boy. And he has thousands and thousands, unlimited numbers of boys, sadaranya sakas, ordinary friends, unlimited numbers. And Krishna would expand himself instantly to embrace each and every boy to his chest. Now when I read that, I thought, how powerful is Sridhama? For Krishna's purpose, and for the purpose of the relieving the pain in the heart of the other boys, he orders Krishna. And his love is so anukul, so favorable for Krishna, for the relationship of the boys, so favorable and so proper, that Krishna will not hesitate to follow that order. How powerful is his order? How powerful is his love? That he brings Krishna under control by that prema, by his kevala, by his... Because it says here, ekanta bhaktir govinde. That's why I'm talking about all this. Because it's ekanta. It is not mixed with anything. It is fully. And because it's ekanta, because it's kevala, it's complete. Therefore, vasibhut, it brings Govinda under control. So powerful. Prema, love, pure love, without any motivation, only out of seeing the pain on the hearts of the other associates, that Sridhama would order Krishna like that. And Krishna also, ekajatiya means we're all from the same community. There should not be any pain in their heart. Krishna is dedicated to their happiness. He lifts Govardhan Hill for their happiness. He dances with them. He plays with them. He arms wrestles with them. He eats with them. He does everything to give himself to them for their happiness and to enjoy happiness in their company. Krishna enjoys in their company. And Krishna lives to give, to satisfy their desires for his company. That's the meaning. Everything is external. Taking the cows out to the forest, that's all automatic. And the cows, they also go out and eat grass only to see Govinda. They won't even, in the morning, they will not even go. They won't eat one blade of grass until they see Govinda's face. That type of meditation, the cows of God. And they're so happy to go to the forest with Govinda and the other boys. But the boys, they don't really have to wander, worry about them too much. The cows are basically an automatic pilot. Once they see Govinda, they'll eat and they'll take care of themselves. But they also become, you know, attracted to new grass. So they go, you know what I mean? They go in the thick thickets and then the boys have to get them back. And that's another trick in the afternoon that Govinda does. He plays his flute and calls all the names of the boys and the cows. Calls all the names of the cows specifically, their names with his flute. And the cows are so happy being addressed by Krishna. So they all come running, you know. And Sri Dhamma turns to Sunam and says, Aribaya, what kind of a magician do we got? By playing his flute, he calls all the cows here. You know, it's exceptional. It's not an ordinary coward boy who can do that. You know, play your flute in a specific way and all the cows come rolling on. You know, Govinda's got a special attraction. Special magician. The Lord of the land, the cows, and the senses. So, Prahlad Maharaj has used the word Govinda because it's a special aspect of Krishna. One who gives himself to the land, the cows, and the senses, and is fully able to satisfy the land and the cows and the senses. It's worthy for Ekanta Bhakti. Don't think that your one-pointed devotion will go in vain. By using the word Govinda, it means that there will definitely be perfection, success, and completeness. By using the word Govinda, Ekanta Bhaktira Govinda, you can, with one-pointed version, you can serve in devotional service and be happy that you will achieve the perfection of life and life will become successful. Yat sarvatra tarikshanam, and see Govinda anywhere and everywhere. That's the goal of human life. Now the whole idea is, take the previous shloka. It's a cumulative thing. He was saying, anyone, daityas, demons, yakshas, rakshasas, koibi, anyone. If they worship Govinda in devotional service, they can become successful. They can build a relationship with him. And what is the essence of that relationship? Ekanta bhaktira Govinda. One point of division. One point of vision. According to your sambandha. The coward boys are 100%. They don't see anything else and nothing else is important for them. The gopis see nothing else. The Mother Yasoda and her friends see nothing else. And the cows see nothing else. And in each relationship, every devotee is proper and feels perfect and there's nothing higher. Exclusive. Lucky, special, first class, nothing better. I don't want anything else. It's all I want. Ekanta Bhakti Govinda means sarvatra tarikshanam. At all times we're going to see Govinda, think of Govinda, talk of Govinda, serve Govinda, and we don't want anything else. We have no other aspiration in life. It's all perfect. And Chaitanya Charitamrita mentions that. Every devotee thinks their relationship with Krishna is perfect and the highest. And he says, neither I or my devotees will realize this, but we'll be completely mesmerized by each other's love. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Yogamaya makes it. Yogamaya means it's covered over, that we forget. They forget them. They're so much absorbed in Govinda, they forget themselves. And Govinda is so reciprocal with them, he forgets himself. Sometimes by their prema, they bring him under control and he's forced to concede. In all these relationships, he's forced to concede by their love. He likes to concede. Sometimes he wins. Most of the time, he doesn't. He concedes to give the devotees such great pleasure. And you can imagine that it's part of their ekanta bhakti when they win. When they win, it just becomes such an overwhelming happiness. Their whole day is made perfect. And that's another aspect of Sridhama's prema, is that his mood is that I'm going to beat that fellow in the competition. It's called Pittamardak. I am going to win. I am going to defeat him. That's his bhava. Along with his kevala, his friendship is kevala, but his relationship, Rupa Goswami Pad describes as Pittamardak, beat the chief. And because he has that thing, and it's so filled with love for him, Krishna submits to him. Sometimes. Most of the time. And when he doesn't, oh, he gets a good tongue lashing. Sridhama will not take it. It gives him and that's what Suradasa's Sangeet is there. Oh boy, does Sridhama give him the sauce. And it's relishable. And sometimes he gives Krishna a lashing. You know, and it's relishable, the Bhajan Suradas says there. I actually got to push different devotees to do it, to get their head out of business in Vrindavan and get their mind into Govinda. One of them I'm going to push in this regard. I'm going to continually request him. Are Baba, what is this business life, you know, in this material world in Vrindavan? You know, Ekanta Bhakti to Govinde. Sarvatra yadikshanam. You know, whatever, just go back to the old thing, you know. You're all right, you're a Brijabasi, you understand Brij Bhuli, Brij Bhasha. Now give it to the world. You know, transcribe it. Transcribe it so that people like us can drink it. Why not? It's so powerful. When you read about the prema involved, that Sri Dhamma blasts Krishna and says in one bhajan, he goes, at the time of playing, who's the boss? He says, I beat you at the competition fair and square. And here you're standing with your cows to the side and pouting. Huh? Look, we don't live in your house. Neither do we eat your food. And because you've got a few more cows than us, it gives you no right to change the rules of the game. He says it right there in the bhajan. Just because you got a few more cows than us, it gives you no right to change. If you insist on changing the rules of the game, we're going to complain with Mother Yasoda. And henceforth, tomorrow, we'll not play with you. Now, that's a big threat. That we won't play with you from tomorrow? That's a big threat. So Govinda becomes pensive. He thinks that, wow, that's a big statement. He's not going to play with me from tomorrow. And then Govinda bows his head, becomes pensive. Then he raises his head and he takes a vow in the name of his father, Nanda Maharaj. Okay, I'll be the horse. The whole idea was that if he's the loser, then he's got to carry the victor on the forehead. And the victor is going to harass the loser. You know, that this horse is really slow. You know, Sridhama will dig his heels into his back. This horse is really slow. You're really slow. Get a move on, you know. And Govinda has got to tolerate all that. You know what I mean? It's part of the game. You know, he's got to be a horse now. And he didn't want to be the horse. And Sridhama blasted him until he would agree to be the horse. Finally, he said, all right. And the next bhajan, Suradas says, and if you don't like it, you can take your cows and go somewhere else. It's like the intensity of Sridhama's statement continues over into the next bhajan. You go, well, what's going to be next? Well, what's going to be next? It's like leaving you hanging, you know, like in suspense. Well, what's going to be next? What else did Suradas say? You know, what else is going to be next? You know, what are these acharyas, their darshan and their bhajan, you know? What are they going to reveal again to us about this pastime? You know, it's like, it makes Govinda very attractive. When you chase the chewed remnants of these acharyas, it's ecstatic. It's more than just history. It's more than just the old days. It's food for the sadhakas. It's what keeps us going. And obviously it's what kept them going also. It kept their Govinda Smarnam going until they drop. You know, and if they think of Govinda like that, then it depends on Govinda. If Govinda was satisfied with their absorption, then they join the club. You know what I mean? Krishna is the judge and the jury is his associates. You want to join their exclusive club, you better come up to their standard, whether you can be a member or not. You know, begging is the big deal. All the acharyas are begging. And no matter how good or how lousy of a devotee you are, begging is the bottom line. We should never give up that. Beg, learn bhajans of Narottam, how he begs, how Rupa Goswami begged. And they do it with such exquisite Sanskrit poetry. They beg in such... And Chaitanya Charitam, Chaitanya Bhagavat, I love to read this chapter again and again. It was so nice. When Gauranga goes to the bank of the Ganga in the morning in his service attitude to please the Panchatattva, and they come, and Gauranga gives them durva grass, he gives them Ganges mud, you know? And he collects flowers and gives them in a basket. He wrings their wet dhoti out and he gives them a dry one. You know, Gauranga's service attitude comes out to the Panchatattva because they're elderly. Srivast Thakur is not a young man. He's father, literally, that same generation. So it's amazing to see. And then, oh, the ecstatic shlokas of how they shower Gauranga with benediction verses and the hopes that the Panchatattva have for him in his preaching. Oh, it's so charming. You know, it's like those Bengali verses are just chew at you. You know, it's like, wow. It makes us really want to memorize it. Jai Radha Gopinath, Jai Gornatai, Jai Nathji Bhagawan, Tulsi Rani Ki Jai. Hey, class is over. Long time ago. Saved by the Pujari. Hare Krishna. More later during Brahmachari class. Okay? More later that time. Okay? Thank you much. Questions can come later. Oh, yeah. Hey, I really like a good question. It's the best snack that a sannyasi can ever digest. When you become an old dog, and I'm a newbie in the old dog club, so it's only going to get worse. You know, digestion is only going to get worse. Diseases are only going to become manifest more. You know what I mean? It's like that. But questions, we can chew on them for hours. We can chew on them for days. You know, it's tasty. It's the tastiest snack you can ever give is a good question. You know, and if it's a jvalita prashna, if it's a question that's been eating the inside of you for a long time, that's one of the best. Because when you get an answer, if you do get an answer that satisfies you, you'll never forget the answer for the rest of your life. And that's what Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha is all about. It's this relationship from questions and answers. Keep it in mind when you come to the class. Okay? I don't want to be empty-handed. Don't come empty-handed, please. Come with a good question. A good, tasty question. Okay? Unless you want us to really fast. And that's sad. You know? Tasty questions are really tasty. I'm telling you. They're the best thing. They're the best and most highly delectable and digestible thing. Is a good question. Okay? Hari Ram. Why are they glorified in Bhagavatam? Varyamesha te prashna krito loka kritaman ripa adma vitmanya te pungsam. Like that. You follow? Questions are great. Huh? Questions are great. Keep one, please. Everybody come with one on a notebook. And keep as many as you got. And the thing about it is that you should always have them. And what's fun is that even if you can't, and it's so sad, like when I went to take darshan of Babaji Maasai, and all I saw was his body being burnt, I felt gain and loss at the same time. Loss, because you can't answer your question. And gain in the sense that it's poignant reminder that shiksha is really the main thing. The main aspect of sadhu sangha and sadvi sangha is this, is shiksha anusara. You have to take the instructions or the inspiration and hold it. And lobha, greed, means that even ordinary things can sometimes trigger an amazement, astonishment in you. So that's what sadhu sangha and sadvi sangha is all about. Try to find something astonishing. Hey, how wonderful, isn't it? The last shloka at the end of the chapter, Prahlad Maharaj gives a heavy conclusion. Really cool. Hare Rama.